Episode 51. Make some noise. People don't get excited for the 51. I was telling
not
somebody,
make some noise.
It makes some noise.
Let's get loud.
Let's get loud.
Remember Jennifer Lopez did that at the
Yeah. Yeah, they're making that a meme now. She sure has made herself very relevant this year, hasn't she?
She's been keeping herself
a little in pocket. We've been talking about Jennifer Lopez more than a little bit.
We have. I feel like she not really doing much, but we are making mountains out of molehills.
That's part of the reason why I noted it, because it seems a little convenient for us to have all of a sudden found time for Jennifer Lopez, and we haven't really been finding time for her for about 5 something years like that. But you're not. She straddles that weird line with like either doing really, really hip shit or really doing non-hip shit. I don't know why that is.
She is in a non-hip shit moment right now, and that's okay. I still love me some Jenny from the block.
Yeah, well, when she get back to that block, another club gets shot up, and she'll be back.
Well, okay, I got my first dose of the vaccine.
Turn up. That's also
great.
I'm
happy to say that I now have superpowers. Mm-hmm. I love that for me.
Yeah. She's been exercising them too. I've seen her fly. It's been crazy.
Don't tell them all the sauce now. Just go get your and see what happens. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I can't wait to get mine. I'm jealous.
Don't be. Your time will come, my friend.
I hope so.
Okay. I've got work to do. I got to be out here with the rest of you people. I don't see why. I mean, like, when it come down to it.
This
like,
is where we are.
When it come down to it, like, I know it's got to be essential workers and then some, right? But they're making all the work essential, unfortunately. They're forcing us into everything being essential, and that's just crazy to me. If I got to be second or third string on getting the vaccine, I should also be second or third string on having to show up for work. But that's not
true.
How that's working.
That's the point.
That's not how that's working at all. But that's okay.
Drums, please.
Man, what a time. You've got mail.
You
can't scared to leave this strip.
Oh!
Yes. Thanks for coming out tonight. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me.
Hit me.
I appreciate that.
Hello, Moto.
March. It's March.
Oh,
2021. Do you know what I was talking about when I said March?
No.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's March, which means the long-awaited Coming to America sequel came along.
Oh, is that?
That's what I was trying to do.
Oh.
You know, it's one of those things, like, you remember when you first started hearing about reboots coming out, and it always seemed like the date was crazy far away. Like, it was
yes.
Like, yeah, it's crazy that those dates are coming. You know, like,
yeah.
We saw Bad Boys 3, and I was like, wow, I remember when they was making fake posters of this shit on Facebook.
Right?
We've come a long way.
We have. It's here.
Yeah.
Coming to America, it's been a little minute now, so I assume most of you have watched this, but if you haven't, spoiler alert, we are about to do a review.
Can I preface this real quickly?
I thought we were prefacing.
Yeah, can I preface? Can I
preface the preface?
Yeah, what a preface.
We already prefaced
the preface.
Now
can
this
I
the
preface?
Okay, got you.
Okay, so there was a planned live tweeting of this.
Oh.
I did not like that. I thought that was a little obtrusive. Okay, because here's the thing. I do know that we've all been sort of tweeting about whatever we've been watching since quarantine, and we did that beforehand, but you would always have this little courtesy was like Black Panther's out, and for like 3 or 4 weeks you'd be like, we were so good. In 3 or 4 weeks, can't wait to see how you guys feel about it, right? You
right.
Kind of had that little bit of tension, but whenever you do a hashtag and do a live stream of something that you're watching in the comfort of your own home, you force people to have to watch it right then or there. Or to just avoid the internet altogether, right?
It's strange with the time because it's streaming. Like,
right.
It works for, like, cable premieres
events.
Of stuff.
Yeah. Live
but,
events.
Like, when you're streaming, like, it just don't make a lot of sense.
We were all, I mean, here's the thing, we're also all on our own time too. Like, so it's like,
if
so,
I don't play it right at this minute, what if your clock wrong? What if our clocks is wrong? If we're not on the same second, exactly. We're not experiencing the same thing at the same time.
Which is pivotal when it comes down to things involving Cameo. Because if there's cameos, you are literally sucking the effervescence out of a cameo.
Now,
if
you
you're just 5 minutes ahead. 5 minutes ahead, you like, I can't believe they brought Michael Jackson back from the dead for this. And you just like, what?
Wait, I'm not there yet. Moment over. It's ruined.
Y'all suck so bad. Why are y'all so bad at this? Like, I don't understand why we couldn't have just did it like all the other big premieres and like waited until everybody's seen it and talked about it.
I mean, it's a thing that's happening now with, unfortunately, they're trying to keep up with the times and it's not really working out great, so, but
what,
you know,
a hell of a one to decide to do this with too, because we got stuff to say about this movie and I'm going to let Jasmine talk more because I've been talking a lot thus far as is. Like this part of the podcast thus far is 75% my voice and it's ridiculous. Please talk, Jasmine. Why are you being quiet?
Okay. All right. So I thought that the plot was good. I thought before the movie came out, when they said what it was going to be about, I thought, I like that. If you need a reason to go tie up some loose ends in Queens, then I guess this would be the reason. Because what else could they have come up with where it makes you go back to Queens? We know we love coming to America because of Queens. And they from Zamunda. And they didn't understand the culture. So I'm like, okay, if there is a reason for them to go back so they're back in the classic, you know, feel of things, we need a reason, right? So I thought him having a son back in America made sense. I thought, okay, we can work with that.
It did.
It was so focused on moments that storyline didn't have enough depth for me. Like, I would have liked for him to go to Queens and there be a process of getting him to Zamunda.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know you. I don't trust you. Let's build that. Also, mom insinuated she might have been a little bit of a hoe, so we might need to take a paternity test. Like, there are so many things that they could have done while still in Queens that would have made sense. Like, we wanted more Queens, right? That's how I feel. I wanted more of them engulfed back into American culture. And it just happened quickly. It was rushed. It was rushed super to get him rushed back to Zamunda when I thought they could have had a little bit more grounding.
Yeah. It was like watching a versus. It was like us versus a storyline. Like, and there was just a bunch of cameos like everywhere. Like, and because it was like so many gimmicks that it was
so many gimmicks.
It was like very low on content. And I mean, and again, like, you know, going into this, I didn't have any real crazy like expectations or any real qualms with anybody working on the film, except for the fact that I feel like, and I explained this to Jazz, that Kenya Barris needs, you know, help with character development from time to time, and he doesn't always call in the right people for such things.
Yeah, and I'll say bringing him on like to create a little bit more, I don't know, sauce on it just wasn't necessary, I feel. You know, I appreciate his work, but...
Well, I mean, Eddie and Arsenio wrote the first one. And I also wanted to make a note that Arsenio is a ridiculous name and nobody talks about it.
I always thought that, but it's just like, it is what it is.
He's a black national treasure to the point where you just accepted it. And like recently I was like, when you sat down and was like, Arsenio, that's what you decided? That nigga sounds like an electronic device. But they wrote that one and like there's something like really heartfelt about the first one that seems very like struggle to get it made-ish to me.
Yes.
You know, and because this was super easy, like what did Quincy Jones say? When money walks in, God walks out. This is one of those things where it's like, yo, money's super involved in this and it's not really that tasteful.
It's one of those things where they didn't need, I don't need to reach the kids or reach a new audience or put people in here that the kids know. Like, you didn't need that. The people were going to watch this movie. You were going to get a huge audience just based in the fact that we love Coming to America and it is a classic film. We were going to show up without all the extra shit. We want to go back to the simplicity and the just them being lost in America. Like, going, just bringing back all the people, just it just was a moment that was like, that's cool, but what about the actual characters that we're focused on? Like, it's just moment, 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 moment.
Was Shari Headley's...
Cameo.
Was Shari Headley's sister there? The whole sister? Was
she there? You know what? I don't remember that being a thing.
Because, I mean, like, that was a really good character, too.
But that brings me another point that I would have liked to... Okay, you decided we wanted to film most of this in Zamunda. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll compromise. I wanted it to be in Queens still. Right. I'll compromise. You're going to Zamunda. I wanted to see more of their dynamic as king and queen.
Yeah, there was nothing there.
We didn't go nothing that there. Deep into, like, in fact, how they've adjusted and her being a married. You know, like, we didn't get any depth.
It didn't require a lot out of Eddie, honest, to do this movie. Eddie wasn't doing shit. Well, I mean, now there are more characters. You know, so, like, it was one of those things I was like, is Eddie doing anything? And I was like, okay, he's doing these characters because they are popping up.
This is true.
But yes, they're all in cameo form to some level. Randy Jackson popping up. You know, the barbershop was a stop moment, a dropout, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, Eddie really only was in character form for, like, very small moments. Everything else was just dialogue. They weren't for the sake of, like, jokes at all.
Yeah, it's just, it one of your lines, it leaves a lot to be desired.
It left so much to be desired.
We just have to address two of what I believe to be the goofiest moments of the film. One, Midnight Train.
To Zamunda.
To Zamunda?
Gladys Knight and... a bunch of people. It was a really strange rendition.
What was that even about? What
you know what else before
what
that,
was going on?
Remember En Vogue came out too?
En Vogue? Salt and Pepper. Sometimes it was like, okay,
and
cool.
Salt and Pepper came
But out. That one was especially weird.
What, the Gladys one?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think all of them were especially weird. Because they were also...
What did Salt and Pepper do? I forgot.
No, okay. En Vogue came out and they did like a What a Man kind of thing. Salt and Pepper's own What a Man. Dawn wasn't there, of course. She don't deal with them. And Spinderella wasn't there, of course. She don't deal with them. The Pips wasn't there, of course. They dead. I don't know if they're dead or not, actually.
We love killing people.
I killed all the Pips.
Okay. Well, I found...
What's their names? Brandon and Brian.
Pip 1.
Oh, Pip 1 and Pip 2.
Pip 2. Pip 3.
All right, chill out. You start like Dr. Seuss now. Get your ass canceled.
They'll probably find a reason to cancel us at some point. I mean, I'm sure you can find something here.
Yeah.
Secondly, the Teyana Taylor performance that ended up being the Sun's rap performance, that was the most unnatural, weird. What was
this
that?
This is why I said it was like watching the verses and it was us versus a storyline. Because I could not figure out.
Where does it fit?
It doesn't.
Where does it fit?
And Jermaine Fowler started rapping.
Does at any point in this movie, does he bring up the fact that he want to be a rapper?
No, not only that.
But is that his career?
No, even in real life, it's not his career.
So what was the point? Wrote that in? I want to talk to them.
Yeah, because whenever those singers came out, whenever musicians come out to do media, it's a co-opportunity for the musician and for the movie. Jermaine Fowler is a comedian. The fact that he's rapping with Teyana Taylor, and clearly y'all are just wasting money. Why you ain't get a rapper? I don't understand.
I'm confused about how it tied into... I love a good music number in a film.
But
this one was just terrible, and it didn't make sense. I like it when it makes sense.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
This
didn't
make sense.
To be fair, this could have been completely rap-free, and it wouldn't have lost any...
any appeal.
Yeah, in my head, I wouldn't have been like, that. You know, that was a good movie, but you know what? They really needed some rap.
They needed a rap scene. They needed to come out and just start... you know, giving us some bars real quick.
You know, people don't even do gimmick stuff like that anymore anyway, because people aren't that big on mainstream rap like they used to be. Like, it's not as popular as it once was. You're not going to get the right cameo. Just come out and you're going to be like, who? I don't really like that guy that much. Some people do. I don't. That's like, it's every guy that you could possibly have come out and rapped. People would go, oh,
okay,
kind of like him. It would have had to have been Drake or Jay-Z, somebody huge. all these other little niggas, you might as well have Benjamin Fowler, because we don't care.
It comes back to this. It made more sense than you thought it did.
Yeah, okay, all right. But yeah, like, that was super necessary and added to a runtime that was longer than it needed to be. That movie was at least 25 minutes too long. And we can count that, we can chalk that up to performances in Zamunda and low energy on Queens again. It's crazy. You know, they shot all that Tyler Perry Studios, right? And in your head, you'd be like, all right, we got to do set design. Let's, what works best for our budget? New York City, a fictional place in Africa. I like the fact that nobody thought we should make this mostly in New York City, since we know exactly what it looked like.
Like, y'all stressed yourself out for no damn reason.
They didn't have the budget to go on to, they didn't go to Africa and do nothing. So it wasn't like we got any great footage of places in Africa. Y'all are using set design to create a fictional place in Africa where you could have done it to do an apartment in Queens and got a lot more done.
Boom.
All right. And when you think about the fact that it's called Coming to America, and really it was sort of like a red eye pit stop. Like, it was like
it was like they were there so fast. Going to Africa takes hours. I mean, a day, really. So
it was like a small business trip for Prince Akeem for a second. He got the nigga.
Just going back and forth, nigga.
But they spent the rest of the movie in Africa. So who came to America? No, this movie is about Jermaine Fowler coming to Africa.
Coming to Africa.
That's a movie.
You went to America, I went to Africa.
You know what's crazy? If they had titled it that, I kind of would have went in and seen it would have had another half a star. It would have another half a star right now, because I'd be like,
if they put Coming to Africa.
Coming to Africa, because I've been like, you know what? I went into this thinking it was going to be about a nigga coming to Africa, and that's exactly what it was. And I would have gotten that out of it. Thank you.
It is a proper description of what actually happened.
I agree. And Coming to America is not. And I mean, what I was going to say about Kenya Barris is, you know, part of the reason why I think something like Girls Trip works so well versus something like this, and Barbershop 3 for that matter, is the veteran actors that he's working with in those movies, picking up slack for making sure those characters have depth.
Yeah.
Right? So you got Regina King and Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett. And even with Barbershop, you've got like Ice Cube and like people have done this for so long that it's like, okay, like, you know, even if they're shooting the scenes, they're punching it up in a way where it's like, oh, this is what Calvin would say, or this is, yeah, you know, what so-and-so would say. And because there's so many newcomers involved in Coming to America 2, that is where,
yeah,
I think
you're not
is
attached.
Missing.
You don't, yeah, like, you don't really care about the characters. Yeah. I don't care about his son that much. Like, he was the main character, and I just didn't feel nothing for him.
Jermaine Fowler and Leslie Jones don't have the legs to be picking up writing slack at all. You know what I'm saying? It takes a really, that's probably why I feel like SNL is so good for some people, because it's like, you need to be there for a while just to pick up social cues and, like, you know, dialogue cues, so you can always add whatever it is you're supposed to add to scripts, because things aren't happening as they're written more often than not. And in this situation, these actors can't punch anything up if they have not been doing movies very long.
Yeah. I'll say, while the cameos were a little over the top, I still appreciated those moments. Like, yeah, I still like seeing the girls come back, the DJs want to feel my verse. It's like,
now, you
fun.
Know, I was going to note that the best thing to me is how well they integrated the scenes where they added something on in the 80s.
CGI, right?
The CGI, yeah, for the 80s
at first
was really
I was,
good.
My mind was like, what the fuck is going on?
I mean, I could see it. I mean, because I mean, I guess
but it was good.
Know. It was
they
really
carried
good.
That part out.
They carried
actually
it well.
Really good.
I mean, to the point where, like, I also started acknowledging the fact that Arsenio and Eddie generally look really good for their age. Because Arsenio could tap back into 80s semi kind of easily. Have you seen him? He's probably the same. He looks exactly the same. He's aged a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But both of them, you know, big heavyweights. And I hate to say it, but something like this, it can, I don't want to say it's a ruined franchise, but it wasn't a franchise. And now, because it is a franchise and the second one is bad, it's a bad franchise.
Yeah, I can agree. I'll say I don't have the desire to watch it a second time. I might just to see if I get something different out of the experience now that I don't have, like, all these guards up watching it. Like, maybe now I can watch it and get something different out of the film. But we're going to just watch the first one over and over and remember the good times.
It would take some chemical convincing for me to watch that again. And I mean,
and you know,
I can,
what?
I can be chemically convinced.
I'll also say there is a huge community of people that really enjoy the film.
Yeah, I know.
Good for y'all. I'm glad. Like, it did something for people.
To that point, one thing I will say is I do like people enjoying things for the sake of enjoying things without having to, you know, break it down and see, you know, this is what was wrong with that. I know I'm thoughtful about these kind of things, and everybody can watch things at face value. I applaud that. But I also saw a lot of posts where it's like, y'all don't support black people enough when white people get to do stuff like this, something, something, something. I think it's inequitable to not have bad reviews for things that you think are bad just because they're black.
Yeah.
And I do like, I mean, it's one of those things, somebody tweeted the other day, that's kind of like liking Malcolm X the movie and not Malcolm X the person, which is a big thing when you think about it. But if black people do something and I critique it and I don't think it's good, it's not an offense to them. It's for the sake of acknowledging art for what it is, something to be critiqued.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing here. Don't take it any deeper than that. We love Eddie. We love Kenya Barris. We love all these people.
And I'm going to continue to support. This ain't changed my feelings about him being one of the greatest comedians of all time.
Exactly.
It doesn't negate anything he's done for the culture. So.
Exactly. People will bring up Adam Sandler's bad movies, and I'll tell them, those are bad movies. He should stop making them as well.
Yeah.
So, Jazz, what would you rate this movie?
And out of 5 or out of 10?
All right, so if it's stars, it's got to be 5, right? Nobody ever does 10 stars. It's a lot of stars.
That is a lot of stars. Okay. I would put it at a 2.5.
Oh, so a 5 if it was out of 10.
I think I'm going to go with 2.5. All right. Yeah.
I mean, I have to go like 2.
Okay.
Yeah, because I disliked it a little bit more to you. I don't like Leslie Jones. It's going to take a lot of convincing for me to like Leslie Jones.
Okay, maybe that's really the bigger beef here.
Spoiler alert, she says, I'm so hungry, I could eat the ass out of a...
Zipper, was it?
Zipper. We were trying to figure out...
What does that mean? I didn't know if I heard that wrong or what. I was very confused.
I talked to several people about it, and people would say, I think she meant zebra.
I am so hungry, I can eat the ass out of a zebra.
And I was like, and if she did, funny or not?
I don't
still
know.
Still not.
I guess, I think the funny part is you say, I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse, but she's in Africa, so a zebra is more fitting, I guess.
That might work, but also, you're going to have to enunciate. You don't get to just zebra, zipper, zebra in a movie. Podcast? Maybe. It's a movie. You should try to make sure you understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Moving on, something else interesting I watched recently was Soleil Moonfry's doc called Kid 90. It's on Hulu, is it?
Yes.
I was fascinated by this. I don't have much of a closeness to Soleil Moonfry. I watched her in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. That's where I was really introduced to her. I didn't watch...
Punky Brewster.
Yeah. That was beyond my time and everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's something my mom kind of told me about, but I was introduced to her with my fascination with Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was one of my favorite shows for some reason. And she also did the voice of Zoe on The Proud Family.
On The Proud Family, that's right.
Did my voice crack?
You sounded like Zoe for a second.
Right? So, you know, I never had too much of a closeness to her. She wasn't somebody I really followed, but I also like highly respected her as being somebody that was like deep in the industry. But this doc really shows you how connected she was.
Yeah, I mean, Rat Pack Kids, you know, she was with all of them boys.
Everybody.
Leonardo
DiCaprio.
Yeah.
And
they were running amok in LA.
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
And just a bunch of people. And I think if I was in the industry at this time, I probably would have done something like this where I just recorded like
everything and kept
it because that's the kind of person I am. So if I was living, if I was living a lifestyle like that, I would have loved to just carry a camera around for all of my teenage years and young 20s and then open the vault like years later. It was some interesting, fun footage of just kids being kids, drugs and romance, and unfortunately the downside to being in this industry and being on drugs and suicide. So it touched on a lot of things, but I was just fascinated at all the things she captured and all the people she's connected to. She knows every fucking body, okay?
You know what bothered me that was kind of a revelation about that? The movie Kids, two of those guys killed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Mac Miller's favorite movie.
Yeah.
And he made his mixtape based off of that movie. And I was like, oh God, I don't like that connection. I don't like the fact that there's so many people that killed themselves from that movie, and Mac Miller was such a huge fan. And he related so much to these kids, and like, this is part of that problem.
You know, another spoiler alert, sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
They talked about her getting a breast reduction at, what, 15?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Being such a huge child star and then going into puberty and, you know, trying to land roles still and people see you a certain way. It was like, you know what? I kind of feel it when everybody only saw her boobs. They were huge. I'm not going to lie.
They were big.
So it's something that, you know, normally I'd be like, that's drastic. But it just might have been the move she needed to make because it made her uncomfortable, truly.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't be that mad about it. Yeah, but it's still a wild concept.
It's a wild concept. I got a friend that got a breast reduction really young, and I thought that was wild. And she wasn't anywhere near Soleil Moon Frye's, you know,
size.
But I mean, we both know some people that have struggled and talked about how they wish they could have done that when they would, you know, when they had the option. It's a luxury for some people. Everybody can't do that. They have back problems. They just have to like live.
And it's not something that they would let happen that young because you're still developing. And if you have kids, like they're going to grow again. So I found that interesting. The whole overall doc, though, if you're interested in stuff like that, just going way back and watching.
Nostalgia.
You're listening to this podcast, right?
Exactly.
Even if you don't have much of a connection to her, it's still like some very, very like interesting content to watch. So if you're into that kind of stuff, just go check that out.
It is lit. Yes, check that out. Now, what's next? Music?
Music. Let's get into some music things. So, March 27th will make 20 years of Acoustic Soul by India Ari. She came out swinging, firstly with video. I know that's right, India. Empowerment, embracing yourself, your body, your hair, how God made you. We appreciated that.
You know, honestly, kind of a pivotal moment for natural hair movement in general.
Hell yeah. We can chalk some of that up to India. Yeah.
I remember like female comics talking about it on Comic View. Like, I know that's right. They're talking about getting rid of their weave and, like, going natural and stuff because India Ari had set a tone. Mm-hmm. BT Awards was all people talking like, India Ari set the tone for all this. And
it's true.
You know, between her coming out and Alicia Keys with the cornrows, you know, girls were starting to get, you know, into their own bag, you know, from that point on.
And then when Solange cut all her shit off, it regenerated some shit. You know,
it was over for your creamy crack girls. That was
it was over for the creamy crack girls.
Permanent presses was out the window. I always thought it was so crazy about this song. Okay, so this sample, the strings. Now it's sort of a siren sample for young black boys because I had heard Put It In Your Mouth by Akineli, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with, but it's
they know that shit.
Listen, you'd be surprised. Some of our fans don't know everything. You'd be surprised. But I will say Put It In Your Mouth was a street hood classic. It was a misogynistic classic about what you know.
I think they can guess if they hadn't heard it.
So I remember thinking like, yo, that's kind of crazy India would take that that song and flip it like that and make it very empowering. Now, you know, after a little bit of research, that's not, you know, we did recognize that it's a sample from Brick's Fun. And it's a great sample.
From the 70s, yeah.
From the 70s, right? So it definitely could have been less of a thought considering Akineli and more of one, you know, considering Brick. But, you know, Brick do got pops.
But I think that's the beauty of music, though. Look what they did with the sample and look what India did with the sample.
Anybody can do it with anything.
Anybody can do it with anything. Like,
you know, that's my bag. So
it's still a stamp,
that.
Both of them, honestly.
But, I mean, Put It In Your Mouth is crazy.
People love that song.
They do.
The second single was Brown Skin, a beautiful, beautiful song.
I mean, adding to the layers where this girl had a skincare tutorial before she became hot and we wasn't hip yet. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is.
She was doing some things, okay?
That's fresh out of a D'Angelo bag, really. If you think about Brown Skin, you think about Brown Sugar, you think about Lady and all. That's a, you know, I'm making a little playlist for you right now.
I
you know
love it.
You know what you could throw in that bag right there?
What?
Robin Thicke Lost Without You. Come on, nigga. We having a fucking good time out here, bro. Come on.
That album landed her 7 Grammy nominations, a lot of them being for video. That was a huge moment. So great album, beautiful time. We love India RE to this day.
That's right.
So for this episode, we asked you guys what you wanted us to talk about, and we landed on teen rom-coms. Hold on, that was submitted by @RL2. Thank you for the idea.
It's RLTHA #2ND.
All right, get it right.
Okay, all right. So if you're a big fan of the selection, you want to follow Buddy, follow him there. Can we talk about our selection process?
So yeah, we did have a bit of a process to figure out what we were going to talk about.
And the process was based in nothing.
What do you mean?
We both threw out random ideas. And we decided based upon that which ones we were going to do. I think I said Never Been Kissed. Jasmine replied, but she's all that. I think I said
Clueless. But Clueless. We were like, oh, we kind of touched on that already. Never Been Kissed, like she was technically an adult.
Yeah. But Drew Barrymore, you know, hey, man, it's just Drew Barrymore. I don't know. What else did I say?
We said, damn it.
We had a hard time. Okay, so I really thought Cruel Intentions was funny.
No, sir. John Tucker Must Die, John but then Tucker, I realized that was 2006, a little bit.
Honestly, it's not anybody's favorite.
It's not?
Yeah, I don't think it's anybody's. I only went to see it because
of Ashanti. I love John Tucker Must Die.
I only saw it because of Ashanti.
I watched that movie hella times. I like the concept a lot.
Oh, because he was like a player or something? We're not talking about that,
He's
right?
He's a player. He's a player. I know he's a player. Where I get that from, y'all, real ones know. Moving on, though, we landed on, I mean, honestly, these are probably the top-notch ones.
I mean, it's crazy, too, because they're both 1999.
They're both 1999.
And they
both have Gabrielle Union.
They share some
They both have personnel. Two big dead people in them.
Two big dead people in them. Oh, shit.
I don't ever know how to be respectful when referring to the dead, and I really apologize for that. But
you and I both.
Hey, have you figured it out? She's All That and 10 Things I Hate About You.
That's right. And
now,
go ahead.
If we had a Venn diagram, right, and put the movies on each side, there would be so much in the
so
middle
many parallels.
From Gabrielle Union to the dating starting off as a bet. The person finds out they're a bet.
Yep.
The person gets angry, but they win in the end. They still win the girl.
Okay, now the whole bet thing is a very popular trope in this period of time.
I realize with teen rom-coms, a lot of the romance starts with a bet or some kind of agreement. Hence, love don't cost a thing.
Yeah,
can't buy me love.
Yeah,
where it wasn't a bet, but it was like, I'll pay you to date me.
Yeah,
so it's always some ploy.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It, honestly, all that's very Shakespearean. It goes back to the fact that William Shakespeare was a loser. And because of that, we've got movies forever.
You're correct. So what should we break down first?
I want to just, can we, I want to do 10 things first and foremost. One, because something about high school movies is there, especially during this period of time, everybody's so locked in on their identity for some reason in these movies. They are so like convicted about their identity
that this, it's crazy. You're that, geeks,
yes,
freaks.
Yes, exactly. It never ends with people being like, this is who I am and down, I got it down pat. I know everything about me. And that was kind of toxic for me growing up because I really did think that people were a certain way and there was no room for like, no wiggle room at all.
Yeah,
so like, you had to fight for your whole identity, your entire life. Because you see these movies, it's like, I'm Julia Stiles and I don't conform to the other ways of other teens. You know, my sister, she dates men. And I and these people play sports.
Respect yourself.
And they like music. And I mean, all of these teenagers are just brain dead peons. You know, like she was just so dead locked in on that.
She was angry.
Ironically, very easily convinced.
Okay, let's break down the story though. So the story goes, there's two sisters. Mm. One is like on the cooler side. The other one, everybody's afraid of. She's kind of hard-natured, and their dad says that
Larry Miller, by the way, Nutty Professor, the dean,
so you know him,
keep that energy. All right,
he says in order for the younger sister to date, the older sister has to date.
Ridiculous thing
that is the stipulation, because the younger sister was dying to go out with boys, like she just wanted to do that. And the older sister, she hated everyone, so.
And what's crazy is he's dead ass thinking that there's no way you're ever going to convince Julia Stiles' character to deal with boys. And
That was his security, because he's like, I want to protect my daughters. So if this is the stipulation, there is a chance that my daughter will never have sex and get pregnant.
Right, exactly.
So there's this other guy in school that people are afraid of who's deemed undateable. They approach him with a bet to date the hard sister so that men could get on the younger sister. There was two guys after the younger sister.
Right.
But they knew that the deal was in order for them to go on a date with her, the older sister had to date somebody. So they put somebody else that they deemed like weird and freaky to date her.
And this was like the most ridiculous combination of things to happen. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is trying to be with the popular sister, and he's trying to convince the annoying, kind of rugged guy to go out with Julia Stiles. It's a lot going on, and all these guys in this movie look Asian American, and they're not.
Mind you, the role of the guy who dates Julia Stiles is Heath Ledger.
God rest his soul.
So it's, you know what happens.
Yeah.
The guy takes the bet and ends up falling for her. She finds out she's the bet. She gets angry, but he gets her in the end.
Right.
And then the other guy gets the younger sister. She learns that the guy she thought she wanted to date, the younger sister, mm-hmm. the guy she thought she wanted to date was the cool guy, popular. She realizes he's so self-absorbed that she doesn't want to date him, and she does fall for the uncool guy.
Yes, and the music at that party where she realizes it is amazing. The DJ is spazzing. It's weird. It's 1999, but for some reason, there's so much 80s funk being played. Did you hear the set?
Mm-hmm.
And then he like wraps it up with Hypnotize.
Yep.
It was fire.
I would like to note that the faculty-student relationships in this movie was really weird. We had the principal who was writing an erotic novel.
Yeah, Allison Jane.
And asking them another word for dick, pretty much.
She said throbbing member. And I was confused as to how that wasn't a very early thought. Well, people say that all the time, member.
She was very much on her fuck them kids, I got other things to do.
Hell yeah, she was.
And then there was a moment where she flashed a teacher.
Julia Stiles'
character. Yeah. She flashes a male teacher. And I thought, huh?
That was the same teacher that was like, you got pot on you, don't you? And the kid was like, Yeah. And he took the pot. And then he walked past and saw a bag of Doritos and took those two. That was a bit. That was a
it
bit.
It was. And it was like a... It's what we see happen in like Mean Girls way later. Like it's a blueprint type of thing, these movies. And
it's a little bit of an advancement in how we handle sex in school from 10 Things to Mean Girls, because you got a coach that's confiscating weed and taking the Doritos and being distracted by a teenager's breast. Where you get the Mean Girls, the guy comes out, lets you know straight up, you will have sex and you will die. Didn't they catch the coach? They catch the coach with Tran, with the Asian girl from the Asian kids. Yeah, he was sleeping with one of the Asian girls. That's disgusting. Yeah. How much molestation is in these movies?
Too much.
Golly, I didn't even think about
that. Like it.
The coach was sleeping with one of the girls from the Asian table.
So I want to touch on this. I read Gabrielle Union's book. And she talks about this. It's funny because I don't really know the timeline of how these films were made, but they came out at the same time. But she credits 10 Things I Hate About You as her first role. Mm. So two things. One, she plays a very rare role for her, which is someone that is unintelligent.
I know you can be overwhelmed and you can be underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed?
You realize Gabrielle Union don't ever play no weak ass, dumb ass bitch, but she was in this. So I thought that was funny.
I mean, just barely. She didn't have a lot of screen time for me.
She didn't have a lot of screen time, but she was clearly dumb. Like her lines were somebody who was a minion and was unintelligent. Secondly, she talks about her time on the set of this movie and how it was kind of like an adult summer camp. And I thought that was super dope. Imagine being in your late teens, early 20s for Gabrielle Union, and you're staying at this hotel with a bunch of your peers in the industry. So once you're off set, I mean, it's another movie. It's another style of movie. She's talking about we drank, we smoked. Yeah. Everybody got fake IDs who wasn't 21. And we snuck into the clubs. Like, that sounds like such a good time. If there's any realm of life that I could just visit and enjoy, it would be that kind of thing where I'm just with a bunch of my up and coming peers, like away from my parents, just ready to have a damn blast. The reason she wanted to share that experience is to talk about her friendship with Heath Ledger, who, you know, we still feel that loss, like, especially people in the industry. So she just wanted to share her own personal experience of him, you know, still being that guy even back then.
Right.
So I just thought that was really beautiful and a good way to highlight his life.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, God rest his soul. He was, you know, such a great method actor. It was insane. Like, you know, he died doing what he loved.
Yeah.
Then the amount of legends that were in this movie was just throwing me, because I mean, I knew it existed, and it was one of those things I just hadn't really seen. I don't think I'd ever seen it until we decided to do this. But so you got Allison Janney, which, I mean, if you like a no-nonsense, you know, American mom, like, nailed it. Daryl Chill Mitchell was the teacher. He's a paraplegic now. Remember?
And this is before he was paralyzed.
That's right. And he was in House Party, and you recognize him from Fresh Prince, and you know a few other things back in the day. But he was budding. He's got a Def Jam set that's pretty good, I think. Then you got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who he and I are actually Eskimo buddies.
What?
Yeah, we are.
More on that later.
My first girlfriend had a thing with Joseph Gordon-Levitt one time.
I would never live that down. I would just tell everybody the time.
I was kind of pissed about it. And then Inception came out, and I was like, I do like Inception.
Julia Stiles,
yes, definitely, you know, still not being able to catch the sun. And
Larry Miller, who you already...
I mean, could you find... Larry Miller was the epitome of bald-head white comedy at the time.
You say that, but She's All That has even a crazier cast than that.
Okay, they both have crazy casts.
Are you ready to pivot into that?
Let's pivot into the She's All That cast.
Let's go through She's All That.
All right. So, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Legend. He was fucking 90s movies up.
He's got that face. He's got such a
90s movie face.
I mean, it's like if you were to draw a white man in 1999 and you didn't come up with Freddie Prinze Jr., you got it wrong. This is the guy. Matthew Lillard.
Being you know who that is.
Ridiculous.
Scream, 13 Ghosts. Yes. You know him. The wild one.
Do I call him Evil Justin Timberlake? Is that Evil Justin Timberlake? Or no, it's not him. But he does look like he's in a boy band. Like he's like a.
He
like
does
a,
look like a boy band.
A boy man. Bander gone rogue. Rachel Lee Cook. Is she a legend?
No, I wasn't gonna say that.
Okay, all right, okay. Paul Walker, God rest his soul.
Paul Walker. Usher, Lil' Kim, Gabrielle Union again.
Oh, and Kyron Culkin, if you like Succession, which is a huge, huge successful show. He's ridiculous on that show too. He's much more I'm gonna call him more talented than his brother, but he's outshining Macaulay on HBO right now.
Okay, so this story goes. Freddie Prinze Jr., who is Zach in the film. Zach is one of the popular guys, and he has this huge breakup with his girlfriend in which she says she cheated with Matthew Lillard, who is Brock, who is on The Real World. He was on The Real World. You know who makes a scene on his Real World episode?
Who?
Flex Alexander, playing an African. That was so random.
Yes, that was Flex. I could not figure out who that was. It was Flex. Okay.
Oh, he was that good of an actor. He threw you that African accent. You just couldn't recognize him.
Well, I mean, between that and me being disoriented by the scene itself. Because, doesn't he, like, isn't he sitting there, like, on Real World farting? And
he's terrible.
And, like, Flex, I guess he's an African. He's like, you disrespectful. You disrespecting me. You disrespecting. It was so ridiculous. It's a bad bit. Not funny.
So he goes through this whole breakup with her in which she explains she pretty much cheated on him and she's going with her Real World star. It's like the talk of the school. He's a little bit embarrassed. So his bet was if he thinks he's such the popular hot guy on campus, you have to make the unhot girl popular.
Yes.
The bet was to make somebody they considered, you know, a loser, a hot girl on campus.
Yeah, and it's always like they try not to go too on brand. So they'd be like, no, not her, because, you know, that person really just, you know. And they go for somebody who is societally attractive, right, but has on glasses.
She is cute. She cute. She just got on some goddamn glasses.
That's it.
And she does weird art.
That's it. That's
that's all you needed to be a loser in high school. Some glasses and a weird hobby.
That's really all you need.
You're outcasted.
Absolutely.
So, you know, she gets that classic makeover where she takes off her glasses, put on a cute dress, and brush her hair. And boom, we have a hot girl.
And can I add to it that both her and Julia Stiles' character both are not very nice people but think that they are. And that's my least favorite kind of person.
It's just them against the world because they know how, you know, they know how society is. So it's like,
it's difficult. She
stay out of my world. Over here, I'm mature and I do things my own way and I don't live by your standards. Of course, like, she easily gets into the gang. Like, she's down. They start inviting her everywhere. And it kind of works until she finds out she was a bet.
Per usual.
Now I gotta go off on you. Of course, he actually
liked me, and now I know that you liked me because it was a bet. It's really what I thought the entire time. Oh my!
You are not who I thought you were. Oh my God. And you know, but of course, by then he did actually fall for her.
Also a shocker. Wasn't expecting that either.
Right. My brain just can't even process
that at all.
But these two films just show you this really fun formula of just putting a bunch of kids together and putting some angst and love and romance and, you know, all the things that you would like at that age, at that time. So you just have to put yourself in that mindset to enjoy these. Like, I can still enjoy them. Like, I just imagine myself in 1999, and these are a good time. And a lot of these movies are star-studded. Like, I think that's the most appealing. I think that's the most appealing part to these movies is that there were so many stars, and I just imagine that they were having the time of their lives at this point. Like, you will never get a time like this where everything was simple and just fun.
You're not lying. Kiss me.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing. They have a certain kind of music that goes with these films, yeah, too. Like, I don't know what the genre is, but there is certain music with all teen comedies.
Absolutely. I mean, and not even necessarily sound. Comedies, because you know I know the Mandy Moore Walk to Remember joint. That thing is, that's a soundtrack right there. They got some bops on that thing.
Even in Bring It On, that Sweet Cherry Pie. Yeah.
She's my cherry pie. Something orange. Cherry
that,
pie, yeah.
That little soft rock shit they were doing at this time, I loved it. I loved it so much. I would never turn this music on in any other scenario.
Oh, that's true.
But the movies that they were attached to made me like the songs.
Well, the worst thing about like stuff like She's All That and 10 Things I Hate is that if there was a song, they really only had one branded song and they kept sprinkling it throughout the movie. The song,
yeah.
And that's so annoying and corny. Like, it'd be like, all of a sudden it's like, I gotta go get her. And when the girl's going, when he's gonna go get her, you hear, kiss me under the snow. Kiss me. And there's some dialogue, something. But I told you I loved you. I love you, something. And then all of a sudden it comes back full circle. Kiss me under the sun. Or if you ever had to be in a situation where you were looking for the girl that you turned into the princess, like whatever ugly duckling girl turned into the girl, and then you had to like look at her you saw for the first time.
But yeah, this was just such a fun time, and maybe we'll break down a couple more in the future.
It's
but I think these two were like the super duper classic. Can't forget them.
Let's call this the first of our rom-com double feature podcast episodes.
Palooza.
You
gotta add Palooza.
Yeah, Palooza. Exactly. All right, rom-com Palooza. Hey. See ya. Wouldn't want to be it. Maybe I would. Yeah, what are y'all doing?
You know what? I just might want to be one of you niggas, because the shit ain't always sweet over here. Y'all really might be living it up. I want a piece of that. I did get my stimmy, though. I ain't gonna lie. The stimmy hit. I'm about to go get my crab legs right now.
Oh, my goodness. See, it do want to be it.
It ain't gonna be a crab leg left in the ocean, they said.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, them memes are so fun. Because you know what's funny? We can end with this. But I am always like, okay, y'all about to run a meme into the ground. And then sometimes we hit this weird pocket where it's like, whoa. These just got funny.
It kind of, or like some kind of remix happens, like a 2.0 type of like upgrade happens, where it's like, hold on, this shit's still funny. Like, I like what you did with that, actually.
Whenever they said,
when they start turning it up,
they said $1,400 stimmy hits, me at Magic City, bring out the magicians.
Like, That's the one.
That turned it for me. And then I saw $1,400 stimmy, me at Disneyland. Can I get one churro and a bottle of water?
Oh, we could go to the movies and get snacks now, nigga. We don't got to bring our own.
Oh, my God.
We gonna buy popcorn from the concession stand.
They said one churro and a bottle of water, because that's all you could afford for $1,400 at Disneyland. All right. Happy vaccination.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah.